Today, we have a really cool episode that literally left my face hurting. We were smiling so much. I was smiling so much during the episode. So we got to sit down and we got to chat with Tyrone Turner. He is an award-winning photographer and visual storyteller. And he has covered everything from life in northeastern Brazil to Hurricane Katrina, the Gulf oil spill. He's covered healthcare across the country, and he's traveled all over and produced a number of projects for National Geographic, which for me growing up was just like, it was everything. One of his most recent projects actually had to do, he went to Antarctica, and there was capturing the otherworldliness of the landscape and created a project that showed all these parallels and connections between the landscape of Antarctica and where he's from in Louisiana, in New Orleans. We'll put a link to that right here so you guys can check that out. It's really cool. Dive into that. So much of his work brings together the human experience, environmental issues, social issues in a way that is, it just makes you feel. So really excited to dive into this. Can't wait to hear what you guys think. And let's go. We've been talking about you.
No.
Yeah. We've just been going through so much of your work. And it's one of those prep ones where everyone's just been sharing stuff back and forth. Like, did you see this photo? Did you see this? What did this make you feel? And then even like writing down our thoughts and questions, I was like, oh, we have pages and pages of things that we want to talk to you about. I mean, just even like one of your most recent works where you went to Antarctica and then you drew the parallels between that and your hometown of New Orleans and home state of Louisiana was just like, I mean, the fact that you saw, were you, you're on this trip, you're on this expedition in Antarctica, and then did it hit you while you were on it that all this stuff felt similar, or how did that even?
Yeah, it's actually it was the second time. I went to Antarctica twice. On the Nat Geo boat. And the first time I went was in 2017. And it was an amazing trip. And you go from Ushuaia, which is down at the tip of Argentina. It's where a lot of the ships kind of launch from. But once you cross into the Antarctic Circle, and once you start to approach the peninsula, that's when you start hitting ice, right? You start hitting icebergs and then sea ice and stuff. And I was just absolutely flabbergasted. I couldn't believe I was, yeah, I've seen pictures, I've seen video, I've seen, you know, seen TV stuff. But when you see it in person, I'm up on the bridge and up on the top of the ship, and I'm looking out and I'm like, this feels like the wetlands, you know, like you have these pieces of ice, these flat areas, and it kind of felt like marsh islands, you know, and you're kind of going in and the rolling and sometimes really, strong waves of the Drake Passage kind of start to calm down because, you know, you're in these areas which has stuff that mitigate the waves and everything. And I kept on thinking about like how I really felt at home. Like I really felt like this was a water environment that I knew. I was also very nervous about it because I'm like, this is my first time and then I have to come from Louisiana. I'm gonna die it's kind of an awe-inspiring place. When I came back from the second trip, which was 2022, so now 2 years. When I came back from the second one, I'm looking at the pictures and I like my pictures and everything, but I'm like, how can I get at this connection? How can I get at this connection between Louisiana and Antarctica? And I started to pull pictures from Louisiana and just put them together. Things that either worked graphically and really kind of matched, or that worked thematically or metaphorically, or just kind of like, it had some type of a connection, a feeling. And then I started to look at like, well, you know, obviously there's a connection with sea level rise and the loss of the coast there and the loss of the wetlands. So, you know, so I started to just think of how I could write about that as well with an accompanying essay to you know, kind of go into my own perspective of like how I felt about the two places and how I was putting them together. Yeah. So that was kind of the process.
And you even captured like part of the personality of New Orleans in there too, because you had the bird in Antarctica and then you also have the guy wearing the angel wings. And it was just, I felt like that's one of your newest projects, but I also felt like it was a really good entry point for all of us because so much of your work has so many layers to it.
No,
that when we were talking, we were like, I feel like this isn't going to be a discussion about photography. It's definitely a discussion about visual storytelling. It is so deep that the stitching project that you did with New Orleans, where you took multiple photos of one person, and then that person also got to determine the next person, so they were stitching together portraits throughout the area. That one, there's just everything has a lot of levels. And that brought about a question from Latte. We were looking through and we're like, you didn't actually formally train in photography?
No.
So where did your creative journey, how did this happen?
I think a lot of it comes from, I didn't study, I never studied photography. I studied international relations, and I have a master's in comparative politics. I always really liked it, and I wanted to do it. In between undergrad and grad school, I worked for an architectural photographer. His name is Baltazar Korab. He's now deceased, but he was just an amazing person with architecture. He's like really one of the forefathers forefathers of architectural photography, and kind of developed it from in the 50s. And you know, he worked for these great people. You know, shot for Frank Lloyd Wright, shot for Eliel Saarinen, shot for all these people who were just amazing. And and his thought process, you know, was like very basic and yet really intense. And I think that inspired me. Like, I still have rules in my mind from Korab. Like, he was always like, you know, frame first, light second. So if you're going to light a scene, you need to frame it first, and then you're going to light it, right? And I'm like, okay, that makes sense. And, you know, or like a certain formula, you know, that those pictures of like where you have the bleed of light from a building, it's bleeding out, and you have kind of the blue of you know, it's already, the sun's already set. So you have that kind of, those kind of pictures. That's a certain, you know, this is not a magic. It's like a certain setting. It's F8 at 8 seconds at 100 speed. At 100 ASA, if the metering is F8 at 8 seconds, that's the picture. And he's like, if it's too early, it's not going to work. If it's too late, it's not going to work. So none of this stuff is like, it's not magic. It's like being in the right place, having a good idea. You know, it's like, it's work in that way. But you know, there's certain rules to apply, and I always found that really, really interesting and really it's inspiring, really, because it's like, okay, I have access to that too. I you know, and then later on, once I got into it, really, my relationship with Susan, she was we worked at the same newspaper. I was blown away by her portfolio when I first saw it, and as we developed, you know, kind of we both like really developed as photographers, it kind of like, you know, bouncing things off of each other. I've had a couple of editors. Susan's probably my hardest and best editor. And also, I tell you what, this is a really secret advantage, but Susan's work at the Corcoran, you know, I would go to, you know, she would say like, hey, come to this talk, come to this. And you'd start to see all these artists who were using photography and you're like, wow, I never would have thought of doing that. And so it really opened me up to different ways of using photography and using narrative in order to tell a story.
Listening to your journey, two things popped in my head. One, I love the fact that your wife, Susan, has been such a strong creative sounding board for you in your life. I feel like creative process works so well when you have someone in-house. You
can agreed.
Bounce everything right, off. Right. Latte and I know a little something about that.
A little bit.
He's like, not questions, please. But then also, when you were talking about how photography wasn't necessarily your plan, it made me think of just the power of photography and how specifically like so many people want to dabble in it. Like, it's one of those things that captures us when we're really young. I'm seeing it with my kids, 2 and 5, and they're always like, look at this picture I made. There's something about photography, and I want to know what you think it is, that captivates humans. Even if we make all these technological strides and we're going here and there, there's still this desire to make a good photo and to show someone else the way that you saw something in a still form. I mean, look at Instagram. Like, there's this whole thing set up for people to be like, look at what is that? What's that power?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's, I know for me, it was like just the ability to make an image, to see something in front of you, to reproduce something that you've seen or something like that. You know, you've seen a sailboat photo, you've seen a photo of a flower, and all of a sudden you're like, hey, I made this, you know? There's something very captivating about the still image in that way, that you can like look at it and go back to it and that kind of stuff. Early on though, I mean, my mom bought me my first camera, which was a Fujika ST605. I mean, we were just talking about this. I think I was 12, from Gaylord's department store in Metairie, right? In Metairie and Louisiana. And so I'm like, it had a screw mount, a universal screw mount. So you actually had to screw the lens in and screw it out, and not like a click and you take the lens off. And that little camera, I loved it. It had a very accurate meter. I shot black and white. I learned how to process film and to print badly, but I did learn how to do it. And so it was making an image. Yeah, especially, you know, the like seeing it come up in a dark room was amazing. Nowadays, people are so versed in imagery and the ability to make images of themselves and others. I think the challenge is to it's not as much making the image, but what are you doing? You know, like what's the focus of what you're doing. For me, it's less about like the photographic process is important because it's a means to an end, but it's really about the relationships with the people that you have. It's about how do you make an image? How do you evoke a feeling with that image that you're trying to evoke? You know, I remember one of, like Susan's images did that to me. But later on, when I was really looking at Eugene Richards, who's a photographer from the, you know, she produced these amazing, really difficult images of, you know, of things like, you know, drug abuse and things. And in the height of the crack time, you know, in the 90s, and you look at his images and you're like, how in the heck did he get these pictures? Not just the access, but how intimate the photographs are. And I'm like, in my own way, I want to have that type of, you know, I want someone to have that feeling or a similar type of feeling. You know, I'm not Eugene Richards, you know, but I would hope that my photography would give someone that feeling as well. And so
I'm going to jump in and just say,
I know,
that
right?
with the Brazil project, with the glue,
the
glue
sad
boys,
ecstasy. I mean,
yeah, that is, if you're wondering if whether you're able to achieve that, without a doubt, I was thinking the same thing. I was asking myself the same thing, which is, you know, how are you staying safe in that environment? How are kids able to even exist in that environment? You know, you brought us right there. It's shocking and intentionally so. And I just got to say that you've fully communicated that it hit right here.
Yeah,
very much so.
I appreciate that. And I think that was a type of an essay that I was hoping to produce, because the situation was so bad for those kids, you know, and there's only, you know, kind of like the, it's only that intimacy in those moments that would really communicate how bad it was.
These children were holding off hunger by sniffing glue out of water bottles, pretty much. How did you stumble upon it? Was it just very out in the open? And then how did you gain access? And what were you feeling while you were shooting it? And how, I have so many questions.
Yeah, that one was tough. It was probably over about 6 months off and on of work. And Susan and I were living in Recife, Brazil, and doing work. And I had actually, we were fellows with the Institute of Current World Affairs, who gave us fellowships to go and write and photograph about things going on in Brazil. And I had proposed doing stuff on youth issues there. And I knew that there were, you know, like the index of inequality was so high, you know, between the rich and the poor there. There's just, poverty is really endemic. And once I got there, I was kind of looking around in Recife for how, you know, you could see the kids, the kids who were sniffing glues. They were, and it was very kind of intimidating, you know, people were scared of them. It was very, you know, you think risky. So I was like, okay, how could I do this? The first organization I met that was working with them, because I'm like, okay, you know, I could meet them through an organization, was a governmental organization, who was trying to get them off the streets and into a kind of a shelter. And I went out with them for one day, and they said, oh, the only thing is you can't show their faces. And I'm like, okay. And I'd seen lots of pictures of that, and, you know, with the faces blocked or not shown. I'm like, you know, nobody, I can't connect with that, you know, at all. And in fact, in Brazil, you couldn't publish those images without blacking out the face. That was never published there. In fact, well, those pictures have never really been published in a magazine or something like that. And then this second organization that I was a nonprofit called Streets and Plazas, Ruas e Praças, and Streets and Plazas. And so I started going with them, and I met this group in a certain neighborhood. They, ironically, out in front of the Children's Hospital of Recife, right outside the gate of the Children's Hospital. And they, I went with this social organization who was also trying to kind of work with them intensely, get them off the streets, get them off the glue, that kind of stuff. I went probably a couple of weeks going with them until the kids knew me, and then I started going on my own. And
looking through those photos, I had all these emotions, but then also I just had this need, this desire to be able to protect them. I don't know, I just wanted to be like, how can I get into this photo and provide some level of protection? Like one of the main feelings that kept pulling off, like this siren of like, I have to do something.
It was sad.
And it made me, a lot of the photos, also the slave communities, well, the descendants of slaves.
Yeah, the Quilombos.
Quilombos, that project as well. I had this thought of, what you're seeing through your viewfinder, how you've been able to hone your skills of seeing through your viewfinder. Sometimes Torin will be talking to a freelancer and he'll say, you're not seeing through your viewfinder. You're pressing the clicker, but you're not really seeing what's been framed in there. And how do you hone that skill? And what is it that leads you to the point where you press down and you're like, there's my shot? Is it an emotion that you get? Is it just this feeling of like, I like what I see, or something about this is interesting?
You definitely kind of hone that, and you hone an instinct of when to shoot and everything. And you also shoot through a situation, you're in a situation and you're looking through the viewfinder and you're looking at your edges and what's on the edge, you know, like, what are you going to put in the frame? And what, and it's almost like you want to be, you almost want to go too close so that, you know, where is that too close, you know? And then sometimes that makes you need to bend the frame a little bit because you have to fit something into a corner or something like that, which is, I've never felt like I had to keep a frame level unless it's a landscape, you know. It's like with people, cut people's heads off, not all, you know, it's like cut piece. Yeah. Yeah. As long as it works, it works. So as long as you're in there, you're in there. And I think it does take like really looking hard at the whole frame and making micro adjustments about where it is. And it's, you know, is it here, you know. It's like the difference between a good frame and a great frame is like, is it an inch, you know, is it less than an inch, you know? It's like, you know, do you need to sink down? What does it feel like, you know? Because you feel what's going on through the viewfinder. You know the controls, you know how to zoom or how to, you know, how are you focusing, that kind of stuff. You know all that. I mean, you might screw it up, but you know that stuff. Really what you're working on is, how does that frame make you feel, and are you getting what you want to get, and are you in there? And in fact, when I started doing commercial photography, the art directors were like, I need more space. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, how do you do that? That's hard. You know, you're like,
more space for text, more space for,
yeah,
because it's,
right,
yeah,
for,
yeah, you know, for text and everything. Yep. I remember doing, yeah, like when I was doing the non-smoking ad for the CDC, yeah, and that was a big budget shoot, and you have all kinds of stuff, and you're like, you're shooting with a different camera with this,
yeah,
you know, this big Hasselblad and everything, and I hired really good assistants because I'm like, set the camera so that I don't mess that up, you know. I don't work with Hasselblad. You know, if you handed me my camera, I would be, you know, as I'm like, set the camera, and they set the camera for me, and then as I shoot and we pull the card, it's like, make sure it's in focus, you know, that kind of stuff. And then also always having this idea of like, okay, I gotta do this, and then I gotta back up, you know, to give them, because they're like, well, this is going to be a billboard, so we need all this space. You know, nowadays, what do? AI? You just extend the frame? Or, you know, what are people doing? I don't know. But it's a much different mindset. And that's a learned skill in that way. Because, they were hiring me because of how they felt with the pictures that I had, right? And I'm like, oh, I get that by, you know, being here.
You want an intimate photo, but from far.
Far away, but really, really close.
Really, you know, and I really respected what I learned. I learned, like, okay, you know, you got to work with the background different. You have to work with the lighting different. And I really learned to rely on and respect assistants, because you could hire really good a lighting assistant, a camera assistant. You know, you have like three assistants. I'm like, oh, I need them. I need these people.
Yeah.
And you learn that, like, you're working with a crew, you trust them, and you're gonna get them the next shoot. You know, because it makes a difference. They're solving problems for you that you didn't even know you had before you took this on.
One of the things that Adi and I have had a chance to research, and you mentioned kind of in passing, but you've worked at some and with some amazing organizations, even when you started out, Times-Picayune, but also
National Geographic. NPR,
National Geographic. I was really curious about even how that, because I keep on hearing National Geographic and then NPR. What's that interplay? How do you kind of, and even, you know, even with your with the workshops you do, that's their own separate thing. How do you kind of dance between
how
all
do you
those?
Gather?
Yeah.
Well, little by little. I mean, it was when I got the job at the Times-Picayune, it was the director of photography over at the Times-Picayune who then got a job at National Geographic. And so when I started doing work, I was actually doing a lot of work for Newhouse. What happened was I came back from Brazil, came back to Washington, and working with Torin was like, that was, you know, Newhouse was my main client. And then I was doing that. And then I started getting small things from, actually I had done something small before we went to Brazil for Kurt at National Geographic. And I would take any scrap. Yeah, I would take any scrap. It's like, yeah, what do you know, you want me to research something? You want me to do? And I was just hustling, trying to make something work, right? With the Nat Geo part of it, I, was able to do smaller pieces, and then that worked out well. And then, I finally got my own story. But, you know, it was really through Kurt that I started doing work with, like, more education stuff with the Nat Geo, the photo camp, with student expeditions, then people from a National Geographic moved over to NPR, you know, and so I know, you know, those people. And then I started working with WAMU here in Washington, and so I work with those people at NPR a lot. I still do stuff with Nat Geo sometimes, you know, so it's being in touch with people, applying for different things, I think that that's the exercise that is both challenging and is rewarding, is to continue to try to put yourself out there, to challenge yourself to do that in ways that, you know, none of us are just like, oh, I did a photo. Yeah, I did a photo. I'm done. Everything's good. I have a job. I'm done. You know, that kind of thing. We're not like that. We're like, okay, you know, I want to get to this idea. I want to get to this idea. And I feel really lucky in all the different levels of having really, you know, creative and smart people to work with on that kind of stuff that challenge me and that, you know, hopefully I can, you know, work with and challenge this one.
I remember when you, Torin would always talk about, I guess maybe when you started working with National Geographic. National Geographic was one of the magazines that would always come to our house. My parents weren't really big magazine subscription, but National Geographic was always. And I remember it was just like, they'd be on the floor in the study, and it's like, Tyrone is shooting photos for this. It was like a mecca. They're like, oh my gosh. Does it feel like, is it what I have in my head of you're waking up super early for crazy sunrises and you're seeing birds fly over you? And just, is it all of that?
It's all of that. And you know, you know that the editors have seen so much, and so you're trying to bring something. And you also feel like all the skills of being a newspaper photographer and being a freelancer and doing all those kind of, all kind of converge and you really are trying to bring your A game, you know what I mean? Really trying to do stuff, and they give you enough time that if, you know, you can make mistakes and go back and do it again or something like that. It's like, I'm going to do an aerial of this and it doesn't work out, or it doesn't work out, and like try it again. I think the trust comes in again, where you're, you know, you hear feedback about something, and then you're not feeling like it's criticism of you personally, but just of the work. It's a picture. You can go try to do it again. You know what I mean? It's like you can go keep working until the very last moment. You know, you might get that shot. You never know. You know, I mean, there are pictures that you just, you know, I don't even remember shooting. You know, and the editor picks it out because you're just like, wow, I didn't. Thank you for finding that. You know, and it's it is you end up like working all the time. It is a lot of pressure, and you end up working all the time, just trying to come up with situations that you can put yourself in that will give you those pictures.
That's so cool. It's it reminds me of one of your brethren, actually. There so one of the National Geographic photographers has been doing for several years a lecture on his process. I can't remember his name. I'll actually look it up. But he has this whole breakdown that he describes of, but did you get it? You know, so he shows this series of photos, and he shows this photo of, it's in Alaska, and it's this beautiful landscape. And he says, yeah, it's a pretty photo. It's Alaska. It's pretty. And he said, but did I get it? And then he shows the next photo. And he said, you know, I found this flower, and, you know, or I found this field of flowers, and I'm zooming in. So he shows, I think it's like 4 or 5. And he goes, yeah, it's a better photo, but did I get it? And then by the final photo, it's actually the sun. It's a sunflower and it's eclipsing the sun, and it has the mountains in the background. And he says, I got it. And it's really about that, you know, because people used to ask him, this was during analog film, they'd ask him, well, how many photos does it take to get the photo that you want? He's like, it's not about the number of photos. Yeah. It's the question is, did you get it? And it's always stuck with me. And I love that description, because what you're describing is that you're also given that permission to go back out in the world and make certain you got it. And if you didn't, then they're helping you and they're guiding you and saying, well, maybe approach it this way, or maybe adjust this, or actually, you actually did get it 3 photos ago. You just didn't know it. That's pretty cool.
I think that in those situations, one of the things that you, as well as, like, you know, like the iterative process that you're describing, mm-hmm. Is the process of owning a story, so that you become the expert. I do tell young people this, or younger photographers this, a lot, is that it's, you know, if you're doing something, you want to understand, like, well, what has been done before, and you want to understand this story in a way that will give you an angle that's unique. You know, so that you're owning it, you know, what you're doing, and you're contributing something new in that way. And that's, I think, a really important thing that people don't always understand, that it's like, that it's not like you're taking orders, that you really have to kind of go above and beyond, or you'll only get as far as what someone else suggests.
Things that you've mentioned to people when you're talking about the craft of storytelling through visual arts, I know that you mentioned it's not about the tech that you have or the lenses that you have. And so much of what you talk about, you're like following your wonder or your curiosity or a feeling. And you had this one comment about your trip to Antarctica where you said you just kept being pulled by the light there. It just kept pulling you back. And so what is it that you should be using to make that photo? Why not the tech and the lens? And
I get this sometimes, this feeling of, wow, I can't believe I'm in this position, like seeing this. And this can be from a very simple kind of a thing, you know, like a very simple thing with a family in an apartment or whatever, and you realize that you're in a special place, or it might be on the deck of that ship and you're looking out over the Antarctica, you know, the icebergs and everything. But, you know, to keep searching for that, those things that inspire you, that like you're like, wow, this is amazing, because it is around us, you know, all the time. Maybe it's just like seeing the light, you know, at a different time, seeing something at a different time of day or something like that. And I think that that's a lot of what I kind of that inspires me and that I go towards and what I'm trying to do. It's like what will surprise me, you know, in that way. It's so much a digital photography. I mean, you can take a look at the back of the camera and you can see the image. You know, that it used to be that you had to wait a while and you didn't really know what you had until later on. Now, you know, to get that feeling of like, I wonder what this is going to look like, is a little different. And that's very exciting. Like when you had film, it was always a surprise. You didn't know if you had the exposure or something. Now, searching for the surprises, that's pretty interesting, you know, searching for the surprise.
Yeah.
In all that you've done so far, what have you learned about the human experience? What takeaways have you had over the years?
Wow, that's a pretty big question. I think one of the things is, you like, I just, this struck me just recently, is that you never know someone's life by just looking at them. You know, you never know. Like, you just don't know what they've been through, what they're dealing with, what joys they have, what sadnesses. It's just like, you just never know until you ask, or until you go with them, or you do this. I think that's really humbling and really important to kind of keep a hold of, because I, like a lot of people, tend to judge pretty quickly. You know, it's like you see someone, you see how they're dressed, you see what they look like, you're kind of making judgments. That's natural, you know. But you know, when you can slow down and you do meet someone and talk to them, and you know, they let you take their picture, that, you know, you, it's always like, it's always fascinating, and it's always like a real treat. And I think that that's another thing that I try to talk to people who are trying to improve, especially with people photography, is that like, you want to ask them in a way that is exciting, you know. You know, somebody comes up to me and they kind of like, they don't really know what they're doing, they're like, can I maybe take a picture? And like, no, it's all right, I'm going, you know. But if they're like, you know, you have the most amazing haircut in the world, blah blah blah, or something. Oh, you know, it's like, yeah. I love your
really
hat.
Go for it.
I mean, go for it. It's like, I love you. Yeah. You know, not to lie, but to kind of clue into like what drew you to that person.
Right.
Yeah. What why do you want to take their picture? You should understand you want to take that picture. You know, you know, like, I saw this one guy, they had a gun tattoo on the side of his head. You know, it's like, man, that's an awesome gun tattoo. You, if somebody's got a gun tattoo, they're proud of it. So, so it's like, you know, having fun. People want to have fun. And even in bad situations, people are people. And they still, you know, there's still some type of joy in the connection. And I think that's really that the joy of that connection is something that inspires me.
This was such a blast, and honestly an honor to talk with you about photography, about travel, about New Orleans specifically, about National Geographic, NPR, WAMU. It's just an amazing storied career already, and we really just can't wait to hear about your next project, the one after that, and clearly the one after that as well. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you. I really enjoyed it.